You know, this church invests massive amounts of time and energy and resources into the next generation. It takes the largest slice of our budget, and I'm so glad that they do, because I was one of those kids. When I was in seventh grade, church was not a part of my family dynamic, and I was invited to come and be a part of this place. For the next several years then, I attended, and I came to our high school camp where I heard about Jesus. I gave my life to him, and he's been transforming me ever since. And he continues to do that for thousands of kids and students every single year around here. Just to give you an idea of the magnitude of what we get to be a part of, we've got over 11,000 kids and students that attend every single weekend. We've got 835 adult coaches that love our kids. We've got 15,000 STARS athletes. We've got 224 star or special needs kids, students, and adults. And in my opinion, it's one of the greatest special needs ministries in the country. And we have 1,078 kids and students that have been baptized this year. It's exciting. That's just since January, and we're about to add 100 or so more this weekend. And so it's just exciting to see what God is doing at this church. You know, one of the characteristics of this next generation that I appreciate is their appetite for challenges and being challenged. You can see this in a playful way if you get online, social media challenges, YouTube challenges. To kind of give you a taste of some of these that go on, you know, they've got the bottle flip that has been terrorizing teachers and parents for like 3 years now. We've actually banned it in our household. And I'll show you a quick clip of where it all started so you know who to blame. I love that they lose their minds over a bottle flip. It's been a movement for like 3 years now. Well, I was looking online for recent, current social media challenge trends, and I stumbled onto one that I'm not sure it's a real challenge, but nonetheless, it looks like it's entertaining. It's this app that you upload a photo to, and then it ages you decades. Which sounds awful, and at the same time, it's pretty funny. And so, here's our senior pastor, Ashley Wooldridge. This is current picture of Ashley, and then this is older Ashley. A little receding hairline, it's nice. And in case I was gonna get fired because I showed this video or this photo, this is current me, and this is older me. I laughed by myself all week just waiting for this moment to share it with you. You know, beyond the harmless social media challenges that exist out there, we all know that there are real existential and spiritual challenges that our kids and students face, right? You know, I started to think through some that I believe to be the most prevalent. One of which is anxiety and depression. We know that like those levels are at an all-time high. Out of that come self-harm, dependency on medication, and even suicide at pandemic levels in our society. Another challenge this generation faces is identity confusion. You know, gender confusion, sexuality confusion. I don't think that there's been a time in recent memory when it's as hard to know how you could possibly know who you are today for this generation. And then this last challenge I believe to be somewhat of an undercurrent for all other challenges. It's this war on truth, this moral ambiguity that exists. What is the authority? Is there truth? How would you possibly know that? You know, it's wildly unpopular to follow Jesus today. I think we can look at these challenges and you consider those in the sea of others and start to wonder, how will this next generation continue on with the faith? Will they be able to last through some of these challenges? But we want you to know that around here, we believe that this generation has what it takes to stand up to any type of challenge this culture throws at them. We believe that they're bold. We believe that they're compassionate. We believe that they're driven. We refer to them around here as Christ-centered difference makers, CCDM. You know, Jesus was asked to summarize the law and the prophets, kind of to put to a bullet point, like, what's the purpose of this life? And in Matthew chapter 22, he says this, Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. In essence, he's saying to love God and love others. And we stylize that around here as Christ-centered difference makers, putting Christ at the center. Christ at the center of who you are, your family. Christ at the center of your relationships, of your finances, of your priorities. Christ at the center of your passions and your interests. Putting Christ at the center of who you are. And then you go make a difference. And I think this generation wants to make a difference. Last summer, we had a brother and sister from our surprise campus, fourth grade and fifth grade, Alexis and Jesus. And they go to our kids' camp, and they come back, and you would have thought that they consumed the volume of sugar from the world and Jesus, and they walk into their household, and there is a difference between the way that they bring their passion for Jesus into the household and the way the family follows Jesus. So mom and dad see this chasm that exists, and they decide something needs to change about our family. So they all together go to our starting point class. It's a class that just teaches about the basics of following Jesus and getting connected to our church. And they walk out of this class resolved now to go all in. And so first, Manuel gets baptized. He leads. And then right after that, he baptizes his wife, Tony. And then together, they baptize their son, Jesus. And then right after that, Alexis. And then all this year, they begin to put Jesus at the center for their family, changing their priorities, the way that they spend their time, what they talk about, church attendance. They start to serve and really get plugged in. Tony serves in our kids' ministry. She was asked to go to camp, and she was petrified at the idea of going and being a coach. She felt very inadequate for that. But she has these girls, and they love her, and she loves them, and she's now pouring into them and repeating this cycle of what happens when a fourth grade girl and a fifth grade boy decide to go make a difference in this world through their family. Now, I think our junior high students want to make a difference. I think our high school students want to make a difference too. When we're at high school camp, we ask students to take the next 10 days from the end of camp and just do something courageous, make one courageous move. You know, courage is relative, and so that could be a number of things for our students. Hundreds of students took us up on these challenges and went and made a difference. Some of them posted on our Instagram page what they are, and they're inspiring. I thought you'd need to hear some of these. I prayed for someone different every single day. I decided to pursue full-time ministry and sent in my college app to GCU and got accepted. I played less video games and started reading the Bible and taking notes. How many parents wish that was their kid? Huh? I do. I broke up with my boyfriend. That's what we do around here, okay? You're welcome, parents. I started serving in the kids' ministry. Did you know that we have 1,452 fourth graders through 12th graders that serve on our campuses in some capacity? They actually totally beat the adults when it comes to taking next steps, inviting friends, and making a difference around here. They kind of put us to shame. And this last one's pretty powerful. I fell asleep when that was brought up. Can't win them all, right? You know, it's great to see our students and kids become individual Christ-centered difference makers, but it's always better with the family. The church is going to try hard to set us up for success, because we've got the primary role of raising our kids spiritually. I think it can be easy to see, though, the church becoming the place where we outsource our kids' spiritual development. I think the reason why we often do that is because we feel inadequate. My wife and I have an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old. We feel very inadequate at times. You know, for us, it's just so important to remember how we are part of faith for our kids and our family. And I want to encourage you parents, grandparents, future parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, I want to encourage you with this. Placing Christ at the center of your family is the most important investment you can make. When we pray, when we read God's truth, when we serve and when we attend church, when we talk about Jesus, when we love our neighbors, when we're generous, and when we're sacrificial, we put Jesus at the center for our family. Individual Christ-centered difference makers are good. Families that operate as Christ-centered difference makers are better. But it's when the family and the church work together to create Christ-centered difference makers, we become unstoppable. And if we do that, this is what we can unleash. You know, behind me are these white tiles. We asked high school students while we're at camp to write down what they would want God to do through their lives in this world, to make a difference. Called them dream boards. You know, so much of what they wrote was just powerful. And I thought, you know, I'd love for you to be able to read all of them, but I'll just read a couple for you. It wrote, to stand against child abuse. My dream is to create safe space for pregnant teen girls. To give hope to hopeless children, I want to fight human trafficking. Get my whole team to pray before games. Drive anyone to church that needs a ride. A little Christian Uber. And this last one is one of my favorites. To make heaven crowded. Those are our kids and students. Isn't that cool? You know, I wanted to say something too to any of our kids and students that are in our rooms. Keep dreaming. Keep dreaming. You got a big church behind you. You've got a bigger God that goes ahead of you. You can't be stopped. Go make a difference. Keep dreaming. You know, I believe that this generation wants to make a difference, but they want to make a difference in the context of their family. Reason why I know that is because of 18 years of working around teenagers and kids. I know that also as I started to look through these tiles and I was reading, it started to become this theme that emerged as though there was a message to be amplified to our church as a reminder of how valuable and how important faith is for our families. Some of what was written, I'll read to you. I want to prove to my family that Jesus is not against us. To mend the broken relationship with my parents. I dream to have my family think God is more important. To have my family believe Jesus again. Bring my brother back to Christ. My parents to be more supportive of my faith. For my parents to accept my baptism. Help my mom have the courage and confidence to be baptized. Get my dad to go to church. And I wanted to read one more for you. It said that my parents will love Jesus and surrender to him. I love that word surrender. Because I think it epitomizes what it is that Jesus is calling us to as we put him in the center. Jesus will never be at the center until you surrender. So all summer long, we're asking our kids and our students to consider this idea of surrendering to Jesus and giving their lives to him. At our junior high and high school camp, we set up these platforms, and we asked students to come down and to stand on these platforms in front of their peers, as they declare Jesus as Lord. And as they take a stand on these platforms, they would take a knee as a sign and a posture of surrendering. The light would shine on them as a reminder they're leaving darkness and coming into Jesus' light. You know, hundreds and hundreds of students came and took a knee on these platforms. Wish I could share with you every story that I'd heard, but I'll just share one that I was given permission to share. There's a family that attends our church, and they bring in foster care kids to their home. A few weeks before summer came, they get a call that a high school boy needs placement. So they invite him into their home. His name's Zeke. When Zeke was really young, his dad took off and he was raised by his mom. But life in the house has not been good. He said the reason why he was taken out of his home is because every morning he would wake up and he would be beaten. And so DCS, Department of Child Safety, came and they took him out and they've placed him in a temporary home to figure some things out. So the first weekend that Zeke shows up with his family from CCV, they take him to church. They take him to the high school service and he hates it. They ask him if he wants to go to camp. Doesn't want to go to camp. So we have some high school coaches that take him out to lunch and just let him know that they care about him, see if he'd be interested in joining them for camp. So he decides he'll consider it. So he goes and says, I'll go to camp. So it's 4 days before we leave, and this family gets another call that there's a different boy that needs placement from the foster care system, another high school boy. His name's Tyler. When Tyler was 6 months old, his parents divorced, never really had a consistent relationship with his mom, is raised mostly by his dad, but that relationship was strained. When he was 8 years old, he was removed from his father and placed into the system, bounced around for the next couple of years from home to home, waiting to be reunited with his father. When he was 11, he gets a call that his dad, in the early ages of 30, died of a heart attack. So for the next few years, house to house to house until present day, home to home, sometimes state to state. And he arrives 4 days before we go to camp, and the family takes him to church, and they say, do you want to go to camp? He's thinking it's in San Diego, and there's girls there, so he's in. I'm not sure what gave this family the right to start inviting kids to go to camp when there's no spots available and registration's closed. But I'm so glad that they did and God worked things out. And Monday morning, these two boys show up, paperwork in hand, hand over to their coaches, get on the buses, and they go to camp. And there's different journeys for these guys at camp. You know, Tyler's open to this concept of Jesus. Zeke's pretty closed. Close to his group, close to God. And you can see that because on Wednesday night, the group is sitting together and Zeke's a few rows behind and his arms are crossed because he's closed to his group and he's closed to the idea of God. He told me the reason why he didn't want to go to camp and the reason why he was so distant from people was because he felt that he's the only one that's not going to hurt him. And so he just, as a defense mechanism, puts space between him and people. Well, this night, we start telling this story about a rescue mission where God sends his son from heaven to earth to come and live this flawless life, die on the cross on our behalf so that we can be forgiven and loved and accepted, and that we can have a life that matters on this earth, a life of purpose and hope, and that life extends into eternity. The students all over the place are standing up, walking down, surrendering. And there's some apprehension, and there's some suspicion still inside Zeke. This is really what he wants to do. God moves in these boys, and together they stand up. Boys that did not know one another prior to 4 days before camp, both Tyler and Zeke, and they walk down together. And they take a knee on this platform and they surrender their lives to Jesus. Stepping out of some pretty dark places into a light that will carry them on through the rest of their lives. You know, something that Tyler told me is that the point when he was 8 years old was the last time he remembers being publicly vulnerable, where he was in tears and he was broken. And then when this event takes place and he stands up and he looks and he sees that his group is in front of him and they're crying and ready to embrace him and just completely love him, He's vulnerable again for the first time in a long time. One time, vulnerable because he was displaced from his dad. The next time, vulnerable because he was reunited with his heavenly dad. Well, then, 2 weeks later, both of these boys get in the waters of baptism. Tyler and Zeke. It's good. It's just a glimpse. It's just a glimpse of what can happen when a family and a church come together and we build Christ-centered difference makers.